good at that.
I suppose it's sort of, I mean, the people do seem to think of the, I've gotten a lot of angry email from people who think I've criticized their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there's TV is a relational medium in a way that movies isn't. You engage with these people, and because it sort of spans, you know, there's the element of time that movies don't have. You grow up with the show, and the show's there, and you identify it with certain periods of time. And I don't know, people love this show, and in a way that I did not think they did.
See, I think that's sort of why reality television to me is close to Newcastle. I basically think all television is for the most part about people's lives. I even thought that about Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek, the first Star Trek was basically about where you work, you know? I mean, the CEO is sexually out of control, and he punches people, you know? And there's, like, this HR guy who has no emotions, and the technical people are lying to you about everything. It's just about any office is the Enterprise.
I like Star Trek as office drama. You know, my theory about the X-Files was that it was just Star Trek at the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, Mulder was Kirk without the sex with space aliens.
It was also, X-Files was largely about working with someone you want to have sex with, too.
No, that's true. It was a whole different element.
I mean, it was just sort of moonlighting, but with extraterrestrials.
But, you know, the end of every Star Trek episode has that, you know, Kirk and Spock talk about humans versus Vulcans, and every X-Files ends with Mulder and Scully talking about logic versus reason, which is the exact, or you know, reason versus passion, which is the exact same thing in faith.
So anyway, one of the other things that happens at times like this, as you've pointed out, is that people start writing articles about how the sitcom's dead.
What's that?
People start writing articles about how the sitcom is dead, and there's never going to be another sitcom.
Yeah, you know, they write this every time. There was a gap between sort of Cheers and Seinfeld where people were saying, where are the sitcoms? Now it's all game shows. We'll all be watching, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for the next 20 years. And I just think that's baloney. People were complaining about this after MASH and before the, sort of the rise of the 80s sitcoms, too.
Although there is this sort of famous joke about the tombstone of the hypochondriac that says, see, I told you I was sick.
Even paranoids have enemies.
That's right. So soon, one day the sitcom will be dead. But it is sort of true that it's, I don't know, I mean, I don't watch any sitcoms. I did watch The Office. I thought The Office, which is this British thing that, I mean, I thought it was really kind of ingenious.
Yeah, I love The Office. I think Significant Others on Bravo is good. I like Curb Your Enthusiasm, though I find that, and I'm generalizing wildly here, but I find that women don't like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I'm a woman, and I don't like it. I don't like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't like shows that rely on social anxiety, you know. It's also why I don't like a lot of, it's why I didn't like Rosemary's Baby either, you know, because it's like there's so much social anxiety about having to confront the fact that all of your in-laws are devil worshippers, you know, have to have that conversation. It's so unpleasant. And Curb Your Enthusiasm seems built almost entirely around social anxiety.
Yeah, and it is. And it's incredible. There's too much yelling. Yeah. I still like it, but everyone's yelling at each other all the time. Sort of like in Friends, they sleep with each other. In Curb Your Enthusiasm, they yell at each other.
Well, also, you know, the other thing is, and you sort of talked about how on Friends, they almost acknowledge that they're on television. They don't really, but they talk about other TV shows and stuff like that. In Curb Your Enthusiasm, when we have Ben Stiller playing Ben Stiller, but not really, playing a much more cranky and kind of, you know, chip on the shoulder, you know.
And David Schwimmer did the same thing.
Yeah.
From Friends was sort of playing this angry, cranky David Schwimmer.
And I wound up, like, not liking Ben Stiller. I mean, I don't even enjoy Ben Stiller's work as much.
Yeah, no, but Friends, I mean, the Simpsons writers have pointed this out, that before the Simpsons, nobody on TV watched TV. It was like this phony world where television didn't exist.
Yeah.
And Friends did that, too. Like, they sit down and watch TV and talk about TV, and I think that's one reason people identify with them. It's because they talk about the same things you talk about, the movies you watch, the TV shows you watch. They talk about Three's Company, and, well, that was 10 years ago. But, you know, they still talk about it. They had a series of jokes about My Giant, the movie with the basketball player, George Mirasson.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The The logical extension of this, and I think the place where that whole idea is really brilliantly achieved, is the way the mobsters on The Sopranos talk about Scorsese movies and Coppola movies and stuff like that. You can see they're actually sort of influenced in their self-presentation by movies about mafia life. That's what it must really be like, because
I think that actually is true, that real-life mobsters are actually influenced by mob movies and thinking, well, we should be like this because the guys we saw growing up were like that. So there was a great episode of The Sopranos where Uncle Junior and the fat guy who takes care of him watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, and because Uncle Junior's
going you thought it was him.
He thinks he's Larry David. Yeah.
The can we pretty much start the death watch on Joey?
Anytime the show goes to L.A., it's a mistake. I don't know. I mean, the genius of Frasier was that everybody said, the network apparently said to the Cheers creators, you guys should make a show about, like, Norm and Cliff. Those guys are the stars. And the Cheers guys said, you don't understand. We have a brilliant comic actor that we've done nothing with. Let's make a show around Kelsey Grammer. And they were like, well, okay. You know, and it just worked out brilliantly. Joey, I think, is a talented, you know, Matt LeBlanc, I think, is a talented actor. But can he do a whole show? Partly also is the character. What's he going to do? Say how you doing all the time?
Well, I also think, I mean, I haven't watched the show, but I know that Joey's like the stupidest person on Friends, right? I think it's typical. I mean, Frasier, which I've seen a few times, is about a smart person or several smart people who feel completely alienated from their culture.
That's right.
And, you know, because their culture is so stupid. And as a result, it's kind of interesting. I mean, a lot of people can relate to Frasier. People who maybe aren't very much like Frasier can sort of look at that and see, oh, I can see that's what it must be like to be him, and that's kind of funny.
That's right.
And people who are smart can also watch Frasier and think, well, that's what it's like to be smart and not have people get you. But, you know, only a small segment of the population, or perhaps an alarmingly large segment of the population, will watch somebody just being stupid.
That's right. And the slim read for them to hope to is that they can sort of expand his character, make it sort of a fish-out-of-water story, New Yorker, classic Italian New Yorker goes to L.A. I don't know. I think it's got the Tortellis written all over it.
Yeah.
You know.
Actually, Fox has a show in development right now called Just Being Stupid, but I don't know anything about it so far. They may only just have the title at this point.
You don't remember the Tortellis?
No, I don't.
Incredibly bad Cheers spinoff.
I remember it.
Nick, Carla's husband.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, you've watched way too much. You're too smart a person to be watching this much television. But I want to say, I've never watched Friends, although lately, I've been watching television that makes Friends look like 100 years of solitude. I mean, I've been watching, like, The Apprentice and American Idol and stuff like that, and
I never saw The Apprentice, not a single episode.
Well, see, everybody's virginal in some way.
Yeah.
We have arrived at yours. Well, we have to go. Thank you very much, Chris Sullendrup from Slate Magazine.
Thank you.
Bye. That is sort of true. I mean, I can't hold myself out as an exemplar of anything just because I haven't watched Friends. You know,
well,
I watched The Swan. That makes Friends look like The Tempest.
It seems that was Friends on at the same time with Cheers?
I have no idea.
It's all a blur.
I think it was. Well, I sense that Cheers is kind of an 80s phenomenon, and Friends is kind of a 90s phenomenon.
But Cheers didn't walk the air till 93.
Yeah, there may have been some overlap there.
Yeah.
What would that tell you?
Wouldn't tell me anything.
Oh, I
remember when NBC used to own Thursday nights, and they had these sitcoms back-to-back, and I was thinking for some reason Cheers and Friends were part of that.
You could lease it from them if you wanted to have an event, though. We have to go. It's traffic. Blumenthal on the other day to talk about this hearing in Washington, D.C., and the New York Times has some interesting coverage of it today, including that wacky Jeff Benedict, your personal friend, wacky Jeff Benedict.
Right, my close personal friend.
Who's now the founder of the Connecticut Alliance Against Casino Expansion. He testified that four major financiers, one of them, Donald Trump,
right,
have spent nearly $35 million in Connecticut alone,
right,
helping several groups win tribal recognition from the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
That's the word.
That's a lot of money. I mean, $35 million on what amounts to a lobbying effort. I mean, it sort of does You know, when Blumenthal was on the other day, you know, you hear how things are done at the Bureau of Indian Affairs with some of these tribes where they really don't meet the criteria, and there actually is a paper trail of memos in which staffers are saying, well, look, they don't really meet the criteria, but here's how we could do it anyway. And you wonder what would prompt someone to do that, either tremendous, you know, sense of sympathy towards the plight of unrecognized Native Americans.
Probably not.
Or this gigantic lobbying effort. God knows what they're spending this money. I mean, $35 million. I mean, I'm familiar with lobbying and spending money on lobbying. And I mean, I've seen that happen. But when you really sort of think about it, and if you have any familiarity with that world, $35 million is a large sum of money to spend. I mean, first of all, it's Jeff Benedict is the one who's saying that, and I don't know whether he knows what he's talking about.
Well, there was an article about this some time ago, and it laid out, there were at least four tribes and their efforts, and each individual financier that was backing them, or group that was backing them. Trump was one, and there were, you know, obviously there were others.
A guy named Tom Wilmot, who's a shopping mall developer, and he's backing the Golden Hill Pagussets.
I don't know who Trump had.
I've forgotten, too, who Trump has, but...
I think he fired them, though.
There's a guy named Lyle Berman who's been helping the Nipmunks.
Mm-hmm. What about the Harry... whatever it was?
Harry Jester Ruby-Throated...
Yeah. Do they have somebody backing them?
Well, there's the Subway guys backing the Scatter folks.
Uh-huh.
It is a debased process at this point, and it is alarming. I mean, I'm not, you know, as far as I can tell, it's legal, but it certainly doesn't, I mean, it explains how twisted the process seems to have become, and there's way too much money in it right now. The Montreal Expos think they may have one of those Spider-Man ads on third base. No one from the team has ever gotten there so far. It's time for Sports on Trot, a very French sports discussion segment. Victor Sir, Arnold Dean, Michel, Bruce Evans, and myself. We guess Con de la Mer.
It's not bad.
Well, the point that I was going to make before about these Indians who are... you know, we're getting $35 million worth of lobbying aid here in the state of Connecticut from, you know, these various financiers and stuff like that. I think we need, like, Indian campaign finance reform.
Well, you could be right.
The process has really become completely alarming at this point. I mean, maybe we need something like that. Maybe instead of allowing Donald Trump and people like that to try to influence the process on their own behalf, there could be like a checkoff in your tax returns. You would like a dollar of your tax return to go to some Indian tribe to see if they can get federal recognition.
What I'd like to know is how many of these Indian tribes are actually, prior to the big casino boom, were actually trying to, get federal recognition for the sake of their culture and for their tribe. You know, they weren't so much interested in the money aspect of this thing.
Well, obviously, the casino thing does make it a little sweeter, but I think many of these tribes have long been pursuing recognition. I think certainly the Nipmunks have, going back to the time of Chief Alvin.
I don't think we are. Let's do it now.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, some of these people are legitimate, and you feel bad making fun of them and stuff like that, but the whole process... Well,
that's the problem.
Yeah, the process has become so debased that you really can't... It's hard to take it seriously at this point. And I don't know. I think we are going to have the Scatter Ghosts come in here at some point. I mean,
bring them in.
I told one of the people that we'd be happy to talk to them anyway.
I'm a Christian.
No lover. She ain't looking for romance. She just wants to stay. She just wants to stay.
I don't know if you've read any of the articles today about this new Adidas running shoe.
No.
Not that you're a fitness man. Maybe you'll want to look into this. But
fitness man, right.
This is a $250 smart running shoe.
That's probably why I haven't looked into it.
Yeah. When I say smart, it's it contains a microprocessor placed under the arch of the foot to measure the compression of a runner's stride. It then sends a message to cables in the shoe to make adjustments around the foot using software that calculates whether a shoe is too firm or too soft.
Mm. My shoes are kind of like that. They send a message like right up my leg. It's got a shooting pain.
Yeah.
That goes right up into my hip.
And
they didn't cost any $250 either.
I mean, the whole idea, to my way of thinking, of running, is to be not thinking very much at all. Because if you think very much at all about the fact that you're running, you won't want to run anymore. And to have a shoe that's actually thinking is extreme. And to have my stinky feet inside a shoe that you know that the shoe is... It's supposed to be thinking about all these things it's doing for you, but after a while,
God, man, is it powerful in here?
Smells in here, and it's hot. Oh God, jeez.
It's pretty good though if you could train a shoe to do that.
Yeah,
it's really, really neat.
I mean, the other problem is the technology is so new; it's got to be glitchy. But how would you even know? How would you even know that your shoe wasn't working? I mean, what if it was doing the wrong thing? I don't. I have no trust in this whatsoever. It is sort of interesting that it's Adidas because. I was at Paragon Sports in New York City recently buying shoes for my son, and, you know, you really have an opportunity to kind of behold in all of its glory, I mean, how many bells and whistles there are on, I mean, you know, the shoes that, I think there are shoes that do have live $3,000 goldfish swimming around inside the base of them or something, but Adidas has always been a little bit behind the curve that way. They've been kind of a little bit stodgy and stuff like that, but not only have they put out this obscene computerized running shoe, but they've also signed Sebastian Telfair, who's like the latest, you know, 13-year-old high school student to jump to the NBA. So they've lost their dignity and they've followed Nike and Reebok into the toilet. Okay, we have some calls.
All right, here's Rick in the car. Rick.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
I'm not a fan of TV videos of a prisoner being tortured in the Iraqi prisons, but. You know those Quiznos commercials with that little monkey thing that comes on and sings and stuff? I don't like that. I mean, I have children at home. And they're upset by it. And so, I mean, I'm upset. I don't know if you heard that. I'm sure you didn't hear this because you're rarely glued to the Rush Limbaugh show.
I can't turn it off fast enough, frankly.
Well, you get this very interesting call. You got a series of very interesting calls today. First he was playing... I don't know why I should be mentioning all of this, but I know his listeners are still hanging around. First, he was kind of playing this clip. I think it was this Duke Cunningham talking to Bob Schieffer about whether it was fair for people like Duke Cunningham to compare John Kerry to Jane Fonda. And he said, well, of course it's fair because, you know, he did this and he did that and he cast this vote and he cut the fence and he said, you know, and so we compare him to Hanoi Jane Fonda because he votes the way that she votes. And
Know where she had a vote.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think she really has voted on a lot of bills.
I don't recall that.
But Rush kept saying that over and over. That's why it's fair. Because Kerry votes the way that Jane Fonda votes. And Jane Fonda actually has never served in Congress, so she doesn't really have a voting record. Unless he's talking about voting in elections, in which case that's probably true. They both vote for Democratic candidates.
Yep.
Which
last I checked, there wasn't really any problem with that. I mean,
Then this woman from Florida got on and she started talking about these videos of the Iraqi prisoners being tortured. Although she put it, she goes, that's just things getting out of hand. But anyway, she said,
getting out of hand?
She said, but, you know, I'm much more offended by those erectile dysfunction commercials. He said, you know, I'm home with children, and, you know, some of those commercials, they try to outdo each other and talk about response, and then Rush says, I'm thinking, so the Cialis commercials bother you more than the video torture things. And then Rush goes, well, how old are your kids? She goes, well, one of them's 17, and the other one's 12. Oh, my God. She lets them watch the torture videos, too, because, you know, that's just things.
You can't just get a good torture video just any time.
Well, it's not really torture anyway. It's just things getting out of hand.
Yeah.
Which I suppose
tell that to the
dysfunction commercial.
Entire Muslim world.
Yeah, that's right.
That it's just something that got a little out of hand, and see how that plays.
And I have many other things to talk about, and we've got a guest coming up, and I'm sure you have things to talk about. We do have Tim from Simsbury has something to say.
Yes, we do. Tim, hello.
Yes, sir. Hey, I've been thinking all weekend about this Bob Edwards thing.
Yeah, this is the host of NPR's Morning Edition. Well, you should just start listening to Roy and Debbie on our station in the morning, if that bothers you so much.
Well, it really has, and... you know, I listened to that guy for 20 years, and I've been trying to figure out why they would have done what they did here, because it just doesn't make sense. I mean, 56 is not old. The guy's the best at what he does, and it dawned on me earlier today that you know what this is all about? Now, Bush has put a couple of people into the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, hence NPR.
I just want to back up, just for the benefit of our listeners who don't know what you're talking about. Bob Edwards was, for more than 20 years, the host of this thing called Morning Edition on NPR, which is a station which runs without any commercials, not unlike what God intended. God intended radio to sell products, but these people from NPR, they've taken it in their heads to do it this other way. I say more power to them, but...
But we've managed to get all the ones that they would have played.
That's right, we get all their commercials anyway. So he's this kind of beloved, avuncular figure, and they just decided to yank him off the air and give him some new special assignment and bring in somebody else. Okay, I just wanted everyone to know what you were talking about.
Right, great background. So remember, he was the moderator at a Democratic debate a few months ago. I don't remember when it was, February, March, whatever it was. So he's on the Bush radar. But then the other thing is that they have put their own people into the CPB and NPR organization. So they yanked this guy, is my opinion. And I think it's all about just keeping us on edge. I mean, here's a guy that we all woke up to, or a lot of us did, and all of a sudden he's gone. It's just, I don't know.
You know, I like a good conspiracy as much as the next person. But, I mean, first of all, if you were going to go after something, I mean, I've been listening to Bob Edwards for years. I had no particular thought of his political leanings one way or another. I mean, pretty much... I mean, NPR tends to be a little more on the liberal side than most other places, and conservatives refer to it as Radio Managua and stuff like that. But so he's probably left of center, but he certainly wasn't identifiably that way. I mean, a lot of people hosted Democratic debates, too. You know what the truth is? I mean, I thought about this weekend, too, because I think they're nuts. I mean, the guy is, he's really well-liked, and, you know, and they did it in the middle of their fundraising period, too. So here they are. Begging people to call up and give them money for no other reason than love, and at the same time they're taking this guy that
they
everybody
get
likes.
Bags.
They might get a tote bag or something
like
that.
They might get a tote bag.
And they're, you know, meanwhile they're taking this guy and putting him out to pasture. I have to assume, because the other thing that's true about public broadcasting, and I'm going to sort of tar them with a broad brush here, and it's not going to be entirely fair, but I mean, who cares? Which is that, I mean, public broadcasting is increasingly peopled with the kind of people who run commercial radio stations, which is to say, with the exception of our fine management, a bunch of freaking weasels. And, you know, and there's probably a more porous membrane between the two worlds, between public broadcasting. But, I mean, I know people who are executives in public broadcasting, and they are no more high-minded or altruistic than, you know, some of the people who've run these radio stations, people who will remain nameless but aren't here anymore anyway, and will doubtless burn in some broadcasting hell someday if I have anything to say about it. But so that's number one. So
I wonder who that could be.
So yeah, so you know, there's a bunch of them actually. But so then I'm sort of thinking, well, what would money grubbing, ratings grubbing, low life thinking broadcasting executive weasels do in a situation like this? Why would they be getting rid of Bob Edwards? Well, the answer is pretty obvious. They look at they do tons of research. They look at the NPR demographic. Well, the NPR demographic, I can tell you without even looking at their research, has a lot of gray hair. It's a lot of people who are getting old, and you know what old people do? They die, and then they stop listening to the radio station, and they stop making contributions and stuff like that. So what they're probably thinking is, Bob Edwards has already got us every listener he was ever going to get us. You know, and if we want somebody who's 25 or 28 or something like that, we're going to have to get somebody else into some of these jobs. And, you know, and so let's go get somebody who can get us those people. The people we already have, they're not going to leave. They're not going to start listening to Howard Stern or something, you know. They're all in their 60s. So I think that's probably what they were thinking. Now, there's also been a lot of talk about how the affiliates didn't like Bob Edwards because he went off the air too early and they wanted to be able to go live more easily, and on 9/11 they couldn't get live fast enough or something. There were some nonsense. That's clearly not true, though. I think what I just said is true.
Yeah, so that helps explain a little bit, but I was certainly encouraged to read the article in The Current yesterday, and I wasn't aware of this at all, but of Howard Stern leaning left and being a vocal outlet anti-Bush or whatever you want to say he's doing. I wasn't aware of that, so I was sort of feeling better about my thoughts about Bob Edwards after I read the article about Howard Stern anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Howard now feels oppressed by the Bush administration, so he's turned against them. I don't know how many of his 8 million listeners he can deliver to the polls, but probably a lot of them. I mean, he may be turned out to be a substantial force in this election. And, if so, the Bush administration will rue the day that, that they tried to suppress the free expression of discussions of the aureolas of strippers. And other than that, though, as far as the Bob Edwards thing goes, it's always about numbers. It's always about money, even in public broadcasting. Unfortunately now, I think it is. And I think they just saw the graying of their audience and thought, Bob's gotten us everybody he's ever going to get us. So I don't even know. Did they put somebody in there today? I didn't really listen very carefully.
Bush has got a whole bunch of new people that he's put in there.
No, I mean, did they have somebody hosting Bob Edwards' show today? Some punk.
Well, they did. Well, they've got a couple of Renee Montaigne is back on from Los Angeles, all places. She's not like 30 years old.
No.
She was on All Things Considered 15 years ago.
She's got a little snow on the roof, too, so I don't know. It's not like they got Ira Glass or something to host the show, right?
So I'm thinking they started this with Wertheimer, and I think probably Robert Siegel's next.
Yeah. All right, well, anyway. I think that's just because they want a younger audience. And so I wouldn't worry. It's not a Bush administration plot to silence liberal voices.
They've got enough of those in other places.
That's right. They just take us out in the woods and shoot us, basically. They're not going to bother just, getting the...
I
guess to be able to kick us off of here.
It also could be as simple, and I don't know the intricacies of what makes up management in public broadcasting, but sometimes it can be as simple as there's a new guy in town, and he wants to put his little mark on something, and so bye-bye, and we're going to put somebody else in.
It can be that. Absolutely.
Although you would hope that's not the case, but it does happen.
Yeah. It was a dopey thing for them to do. Well, I learned something over the weekend about why it is that we give John Rowland such a hard time. I also want to say that I'm feeling...
That's all you've got, just 6 or 8 pieces of paper? Yeah. I mean...
I'm feeling semi-conciliatory towards John Rowland because I was just over the state capitol and I ran into Joe McKenzie. Now, Joe McKenzie, who, kind of has this reputation as being the dragon lady of the Rowland administration... a not undeserved reputation, I might add. But for some reason or other, she likes me. I have no idea why she likes me. And whenever she sees me, she stops and we talk. And, I make fun of her jewelry, and she asks me how my son is and stuff like that. And it's just, whenever I meet her, and she's certainly, nobody's carrying more radioactive containment fluid water for, John Rowland right now than Joe McKenzie. But, it always makes me feel a little more favorably disposed towards John Rowland. But still, all the same, I think he should go to prison. but I feel nicer about that somehow.
Yeah, not quite as vicious
about
it.
Right, exactly.
The wish is still the same. It's just not in the United States.
I hope he has a nice time in prison.
Yeah.
How about we can put it that way?
Hope he gets a nice cell.
Yeah, sorry. I hope he goes to prison. I hope he has nice cellmates, people he likes.
Yep.
And I hope it's a pleasant experience for him, and I hope he's not there too long, and he gets back and can get his life put back together and find Jesus and all that kind of stuff.
What?
Well, that's what people do. I mean, look at the president. He found Jesus. Anyway, it turns out that the reason that all of us have built up so much animosity, well, I guess it's not why we have built up so much animosity towards Governor Rowland, but why people get all excited about the impeachment is because we don't like our lives. We're unhappy in our own lives.
Why, because he screwed them up?
It could be. But he says that because people are generally... He gave an exclusive interview to Sue Haig from the Associated Press. Sue's a very nice person, and she's one of the few members of the press whom Rowland does not think are just trying to tear him limb from limb. He basically looks at the people in the press and he thinks... It's like one of those bears, up in Alaska that, eats the camera, eats the photographer, eats everything.
Kodiak.
Yeah, one of those. He just sees, a bunch of Kodiak bears who just, are not going to stop clamoring until they've eaten every piece of him. But he thinks Sue Haig is more even-handed. So he gave her this interview, and one of the things he said was that, quote, because people are generally unhappy in their lives, if they see someone successful fail, that gives them a little joy. It makes them think that their unhappy life isn't that bad or something like that.
Oh, please.
So it's Schadenfreude. That's the name for it. It's because we don't like our own lives.
That's it, yeah.
That we feel the need to see him go to prison.
For the most complete traffic reports, depend on the WTI. Bruce and Colin shall return.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Heather Spesiowski case, too, when we get back. I really am sort of creeped out by this case. I just think it's an increasingly weird case. And I don't know if you saw the picture of Mama Jo McKenzie that ran in the car on Saturday.
I did. I read that. It's a great story.
It was an interesting story. In the picture, she looked like the, you know, ex-wife of Darth Vader or something. <you know? laughs>
Oh, that's great.
That gets points.
Heard Vice Mayor make.
I just want to point out, it was in that little clip that they just played, it was the picture of Jo McKenzie that made her look that way, as opposed to anything that Jo...
Caving in a little early?
Actually, it was really great because when I was talking to Jo McKenzie, I was also talking to Peter Terciak, who's a state representative from New Britain, and he used to have a ponytail. And Peter was like a, you know, 40-something-year-old hippie, basically, mm-hmm. an 1199 guy, and, you know, somebody with all the protests and stuff like that, and... So I was talking to him, and Jo McKenzie said, I don't think we've been introduced. And I said, well, this is Peter Terciak. And then after she left, I said, I can't believe she never met you before. And he said, well, she has. And I said, oh, that's right. The last time she saw you, you had a ponytail, and you were carrying a sign. That's why she doesn't recognize you.
Well, there's a radio station on Long Island. I think it's Long Island. Has a it's Billy Joel's grill from his car,
mm-hmm.
from his latest car wreck.
When they drove into a house?
I think that's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're auctioning,
the house was uninsured, too.
Auctioning it off for charity.
But it's nice. I mean, did he donate the grill himself, or is this like some, you know...
I don't know. It doesn't say here.
Probably not, though. Probably some...
It does say the wreck was...
Scavenger.
Was the third in 2 years for Joel.
Yeah. There was one involving an actual house, however.
Let's see. The debris was collected off the street at the crash site. And Nassau County Police spokesman said Joel has not complained that he wants the grill back.
No. Hmm. The house refused to be breathalyzed. I'd like to point that out, all right?
Yeah. Well, there was no, as you know, no alcohol or drugs were involved.
Well, with Billy Joel, the house may have been
intoxicated. Yeah.
May have been listing a bit to one side.
He did suffer, by the way, a small cut in his left ring finger.
Hmm.
Refused medical attention.
Yeah. Well, you can't go to the hospital every time you have an accident. You know?
No.
Should we talk to Holly?
Quickly. Holly, hi.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Oh, that's great. But he's great on a bike.
He is, well.
You know?
You know, it's nice that he's active anyway, but didn't he have like a ski...
He doesn't end up killing himself.
Yeah, didn't he have a ski problem? He's like turning into the...
He got knocked down.
Ford.
Yeah. He got knocked down on the slope or claimed to be knocked down by a Secret Service guy. And then he this bike thing...
You know what he has to do is he has to get for his campaign song that Chumbawamba song, you know? I get knocked down, but I get up again. That's his campaign song. Instead of doing the Fleetwood Mac, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, what is it called? Is it called Tub Thumping or something? Does he have any idea what I'm talking about?
No.
Does he look like he knows? I know. I can't see him, so.
I can't see him either.
Anyway.
They go in that room and they turn the lights off. So
that's Tub Thumping. I was looking up the name of it.
Yeah, I think it's called Tub Thumping. Yeah, it's the ideal carry. He needs to fall down one more. He needs to get knocked down one more time. We have to think of
it. Oh, I'm sure that's coming.
We have to think of the right thing. His handler should be thinking right now.
He doesn't go mountain climbing.
A special getting knocked down brainstorming session to think about one other fairly glorious way in which he can get knocked down. Because we've got the skiing. We've got the biking.
Rock climbing.
Yeah. And then he can either use the Chumbawamba song, or of course there's always Jerome Kern, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, too. But that could be, you know, that could be part of his sort of gritty determination.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
They don't even have Noma, and Trot's not there. You know, and they didn't play Bill Miller, who was a guest with Kevin Millar on the Buddy Vice Grip show. Do you know that? During January?
I remember that.
Wonderful time.
They have a picture of it in the Red Sox program. They don't show Buddy. But they show Millar and Miller, and they show this hideous easel.
Make sure you give them T-shirts with a station logo on it.
Attention, all JCPenney Incorporated.
Curling accident. I'm trying to think what's left. You know, I think hang sliding would be a bad idea.
Curling accident.
You know, we don't want to get him to get too hurt. But it is
well, would the stone thing go over his foot or?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it could be like in The Sopranos. Maybe you could just get, I don't know. It's, but what we're talking about is that our candidate, John Kerry, so far he's been knocked into, or he knocked into somebody. He got knocked down on the ski slope.
Yeah, he fell down. I think he was knocked down.
Under unexplained circumstances.
Right.
The 9/11 commission's going to look into it. And then today he fell off his bike. He hit a sandy patch, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, a patch of sand. Yep. I've had that happen. I've had bicycle problems of that kind. So we're just sort of thinking he needs a third one to really have it be kind of a motif, a theme of his campaign. Nothing can stop me. No accident. I fall down, but I get up again.
I wonder if he's a runner at all. He must be a runner.
Yeah, he probably is a runner. But see, running, well, it's not that nothing can ever happen.
You can trip and skin his knee or something.
You can step in a bottle or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's better if he actually collides with something, I think. That's better. But something soft. Like, you know those things they have at, like, at carnivals and stuff like that, those big inflated things that the kids jump up and down? Yep. Maybe you could have an accident in one of those.
Why would he be, why would he be in one of those?
Some poor kids. He could be just jumping up and down with some poor kids.
Oh, he could go to some, yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's good. That's got a good image to it, too.
It's a nice image to it. He's trying to be friends with the poor kids and get up on a little inflated.
And then he sprains his ankle or something.
He sprains his ankle, something like that. But he keeps campaigning. Doesn't make any difference. Nothing can stop him.
He flies through the air and lands on a little chubby.
He's indomitable. Yeah.
Puts the kid in the hospital.
Right. Well, no, that's not good. We can't have that happen. I also mention, I want to just go back to this Roland interview that he gave to Sue Haig from the AP, because it also contains the most incredible John Roland statement. I mean, there have been a lot of them, but this is the one. Keep in mind that, you know, even lately, there's sort of more stuff like that Carlisle Hotel thing that he stayed in. He and his wife stayed after the victory thing, and they never paid, you know, and it's he's got private wine bins in restaurants, and he's getting, you know, pricey suits from Stackpole, and there's the hot tub, and there's the dirt bike, and there's the Mustang, and there's the concert tickets, and there's the, you know, and the travel, and you know.
Almost sounds like Joe Ganim. Didn't somebody call for Ganim's resignation while all that was going on?
That was exactly right.
Yeah.
But he says none of that meant anything to him. He would never sell his integrity for cigars and suits, and
You want something bigger?
Then he says, I know my critics won't believe this, parentheses, you're right. But he says, close parentheses, if you're going to be in public service, by definition, you're not a materialistic person. It turns out he's not materialistic. All of these things that he's been getting.
This is beautiful.
All of this free junk that he's been getting, he didn't want it. It means nothing to him. I mean, he's not attached to material possessions.
Uh-huh.
They may come to him. People may give him things.
It's a magnetic kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean,
he just
may
draws
give him,
this kind of
but
stuff
But he's not attached to
him.
He's not a materialistic person. Yeah. By definition, because he's in public service, he's not a materialistic person.
Mm.
Nor, therefore, was Joe Ganim, who also dedicated himself to public service.
Exactly.
And who famously said, you've got to grab what you can grab while you can grab it. He wasn't a materialistic person either.
Probably Paul Sylvester wasn't either.
No, Paul Sylvester. These
this
are
is
people
another example.
Who, if he says, if you're going to be in public service, how does he say these things? If you're going to be in public service, by definition, you're not a materialistic person. So then, also all the things that are in the mansion that somehow got there, we don't know, like the $77,000 secretary desk or whatever it's called, and the $5,000 stereo system. And
don't forget the hot tubs.
Yeah, there's a hot tubs, and there's, none of that stuff. As a matter of fact, none of that stuff meant anything to him. So the people I feel sorry is for are the people who gave it to him because he didn't want it. And he was never going to do anything
for them.
It's
just a big misunderstanding, it sounds like to me.
And they really got screwed because they spent all this money on stuff that, you know, he wasn't that interested in. If they just given him a big hug or sat down and had a nice talk with him, or maybe made him something.
Crocheted a little gift.
That would have probably meant more to him.
You know, they probably are the same way, though. They probably didn't want to get anything in return, either. They probably didn't want state contracts and stuff. Those are probably just forced upon them.
No. Those are people in the private sector.
Oh, in the private sector.
Yeah, they're not in public service.
Okay.
So they may want things.
I see.
They may be material.
I get it.
Yeah. I have the most interesting thing. I've been waiting on Tenterhooks to discuss this with you. I haven't even mentioned it to you directly.
No.
But I know that you're going to enjoy this. I know this is the kind of thing, you may even surprise me, as you so often do, by turning out to have some background in this whole area. There was an article in the New York Times Sunday Magazine called Fixing Nemo.
Fixing Nemo?
Fixing Nemo. And here's the subhead. Does your pet goldfish suffer from tumors, broken bones, impacted eggs, or unattractive scales? The prognosis is getting better. Increasing numbers of vets are ready to do the needed surgery. And this is an article about how veterinarians are now
this is so out there.
Take your goldfish or, you know, any other kind of sort of ornamental fish that you might have. And also, by the way, a lot of these procedures also work on actress Jean Triplehorn, who's part fish. That's another story. But they have even anesthesia. They have, like, they actually described this whole operating scene with an anesthesiologist. I mean, it's a fish.
Just out of curiosity, just how much would this cost?
Well, let me give you some, ballpark prices.
Well, yeah, please. Do they have, like, is it different prices for different fish?
Not sure about that. I'll get back to you on that. But 13.9 million households have fish and spend several billions of dollars annually on fish supplies alone.
Right.
Water, conditioners, food. Not including veterinary care for the fish themselves, which can cost as much as $100,000, sometimes more. Fish diagnostics. That would be the first area we'd need to get into. Fish diagnostics.
I'm hearing this.
From a basic exam, like you're just taking the fish to the vet. How's he look? That's $40. Blood work? $40.
$40?
Yeah. Blood work would be $60 if you need some blood work.
Blood work?
Yeah, you need the labs. You need the labs to come in. And x-rays, $55.
Oh, my God.
To the advanced ultrasound, $175. CAT scans. A fish with a CAT scan. Think about that.
Do you want a cat looking at your fish?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
You can give your cat a fish scan, too. But CAT scans are $250 for a fish.
Right, uh-huh.
Veterinarians tube feed fish. They give fish enemas. Now, that might be a class at veterinary school you'd want to cut. they're teaching the fish enemas. How to give fish enemas. They give fish enemas, fix broken bones with plates and screws, remove impacted eggs, treat scoliosis, and even do fish plastic surgery.
You know, if I couldn't sit here and look at you reading this thing or referring to
I
that.
I think I was making it up.
Absolutely.
Fixing Nemo.
Yeah.
They even do fish plastic surgery. Anything from glass eye implantation to quote, surgical pattern improvement, which would include scale transplantation.
Yeah.
Scale tattooing or unsightly scale removal. But the most common and vexing fish ailments are buoyancy disorders.
What?
I think when they sink to the bottom. When they sink to the bottom of the aquarium.
That's the best one yet.
It's a buoyancy disorder.
Yeah.
They involve the swim bladder, an organ in the digestive tract prone to infections, obstructions, and defects that destroy a fish's ability to regulate air. So they'll do surgeries on the fish. And surgically inserting, for example, a tiny stone in the fish's abdomen to weigh it down is the best option. Oh, yeah, fish, if they have buoyancy disorders, sometimes they float too much, sometimes they sink too much.
Yeah.
It depends. Or sometimes they're upside down.
I can understand.
So you have to put a stone
there. Or
that
might be a problem.
The cheaper thing than surgery.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, there's nothing wrong with your radio. Yeah. Okay, you actually are hearing this.
Well, maybe some of our listeners have had fish you've had.
Nobody's going to pay. Who is going to pay? Or who is going to pay?
Well, somebody, they just did this whole story in the New York Times magazine. 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC. I agree that this is a sign of a society going to rack and ruin. Because I think in the Roman Empire, they started giving their fish operations, too.
You know, if you're coming in with a, like a striped bass that's like, 8 feet long or something, they're not that long, but 3 or 4 feet long, that's one thing. But, I mean, these are little small tropical fish.
Yeah. Well, they range from the fish that are getting operated on, and sometimes at the cost of thousands of dollars, range from koi, that are these Japanese goldfish kind of things that are often pretty expensive. It's not impossible to see koi, ornamental hybrid rare koi worth $30,000 or $50,000 per koi, per fish.
Okay. Right.
So at that point, you can kind of understand.
So,
it's like...
No, at that point, how could you understand? Why would anybody spend $30,000 on a fish?
I don't know. But once you've done that, then it's like, it's like you got Smarty Jones or something. You got to, you catch a lot of die. And but then a lot of the fish who are getting these multi-$1,000 operation are what one of the doctors refers to as UPFs, ugly pond fish. UPFs. Actually, the person who coined the phrase UPF is a guy who discovered, among other things, that when fish have buoyancy disorders, sometimes instead of doing surgery on them, which a lot of people do,
yeah,
feeding them a single green pea, canned or cooked and lightly crushed, once daily, may cure the problem. But nobody knows why.
Yeah.
All right. So now the only person who's called in about this is Joseph the Angry Christian.
Which should perhaps tell you something.
Well, you know, it's interesting that he would be calling about this because, of course, the fish was the early symbol for Christianity, and you still see it on the backs of cars. And
yes.
Stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And do you know why that was? It's not because of the loaves and fishes, not at least not explicitly because of that.
No, I don't.
It's because it actually was a Greek acronym. And so it stood for something. Greek word for fish is ictus, and ictus works out as an acronym for Jesus Christos, Jesus Christ, Son of God, in Greek.
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not making it up. That's actually true. Right. Okay. I'm not even sure whether Joseph the Angry Christian would know about such a thing either, but should we put him on?
Hey. Sure.
Okay.
Oh, you're right.
Hi, honey.
You're right. Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Yeah. No, I was just talking about the acronym. But, you know, yeah, sure, fine, whatever.
But he will be, you know, he will be given the opportunity. We all will be given the opportunity to be before him someday.
Are you calling about fish, though? That it was the sense you're here to be
talking. Well, I was going to say that that we hope that the Kerry campaign will suffer a buoyancy disorder.
Oh. Oh. I love it when you're funny, and I love that sort of deranged cackle that you do. I've never heard you laugh before.
We have a great time. We have a great time out here.
Who? Where? Where are you?
Well, everybody out here that believes in Jesus and goes about their thing.
Okay.
We're very happy. There's nothing angry about us. We're the happiest.